The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile. In the next hour, Dr. Pat showcases some of the world's most influential people in the fields of health, wellness, and human potential. Get ready to live life full out. Here's your host, Dr. Pat Basile.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. And I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us here each week on the Dr. Pat Show. And as you know, I get to talk to some of the most incredible people, people not only willing to take a look at their own lives, but take a look at their own lives in the context of the bigger picture on how to create a world that all of us would want to live in. And so today, joining me, I have two very special guests today. First, at the top of the hour, I'm going to be speaking with Amir Rahman, who's joining me here today, and who has written a book about Dubai. And we're going to hear what Dubai is, why so many people have been attracted to it, and what the vision is for this group of islands. This is very interesting conversation. It is one of the conversations that shows up in pop cultures all over the world. And we're going to talk a little bit about what it means to have business leaders tap in to a new experience. And so the second part of the hour, I'm going to be joined by Robert Wright. Robert's going to be talking to us about One Nation Under Debt. And he's looking at what we owe, why this is an important conversation, and is this any different than any other time we've ever had? But coming out right now, I am so thrilled that Amir Rahman is joining me here today. And, you know, he's bringing a conversation to us as an expert and global strategist, a consultant to many Fortune 500 companies, formerly head of the strategic for HSBC, and we'll talk a little bit about that, you know, one of the largest banks around, written several articles on business strategies in the Middle East, including a piece entitled Dubai Inc. And so this is an interesting conversation, an interesting topic, and I'd love to welcome Amir to the show. Thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Dr. Pat.
Well, isn't it kind of interesting to call a book Dubai Inc., and yet Dubai is actually, you know, a piece of our geological construction on this earth? It's actually a place.
Absolutely. Dubai is an emirate within a country called the United Arab Emirates. So it's one of seven of the emirates within that country. And the reason why I gave the book the title Dubai and Company is that Dubai in that region, the Gulf region, is a very business-friendly place, and much of the strategies there at the government level are designed to make it attractive for business.
How did this place get to be the home of many celebrities? What I mean by that is places that, you know, celebrities love to go. And how did it become sort of this business center of the world?
Well, you know, Dubai has had a very unique situation because it is, as I mentioned, one of the seven emirates in the UAE. And it's one of the emirates that has less oil. So Abu Dhabi, which is the capital of the UAE, has had much more oil and much more oil wealth. And Dubai has always been known as a trade center. So it was a commercial hub for the region. And it really had to diversify its economy very quickly to make itself competitive. So Dubai's big advantage, if you will, was that it realized it needed to have a more diversified economy than its neighbors. And then it went about some very concrete strategies to make itself a more attractive place for global business.
Well, it is one of the most beautiful places. If anyone is listening to the show, I mean, certainly the book will talk about that. But if you're listening to the show right now, one of the most beautiful pictures or visions for Dubai, and I think they call it Dubai 2009, is featured on YouTube. And, you know, all you need to do is go into Google and search for Dubai, which is D-U-B-A-I, and you'll get to check it out. I mean, you know, this is a vision, Amir, that keeps growing and growing and growing. And, you know, some of the questions I think that come up is, you know, how has this, first of all, developed, and what inspired you to write about it?
Sure. Well, the vision, first of all, what inspired it was really the leadership of the rulers of Dubai. The current ruler's name was Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al-Maktoum, and his father, Rashid Al-Maktoum, was the one who really authored the vision initially, which was to make this a business-friendly place. And it really began with some investments in not so high-profile ways, but in investments that made a big difference for making the place a better place for business. So one of the first investments was around infrastructure. And they began by making their port, or rather their creek. Dubai has a creek that sort of splits the city in half, and they made that deeper so that you could have more ships coming through. And then the biggest investment was in a free zone port called Jabal Ali. And that port was built in the middle of the 1990s. And once that port was built, it was much easier for international traffic to come through and for goods to pass through Dubai.
You know, I have to tell you, I looked at the video, and I've watched this video, I can't tell you how many times, Amir, because it is so fascinating. It looks like, you know, a structure that was built, you know, in a future century. It's so forward-looking.
Absolutely. You know, and Dubai's always had that characteristic of being very future-looking. And, you know, it's quite interesting when they engage in these projects. So first was the port, and then these things like the Internet City, the Media City, and various clusters that Dubai tried to develop. A lot of the pushback that came from people observing it was, well, you know, will there really be demand for this? You know, is there really going to be an appetite for the sorts of things that are being built? And what Dubai has found time and time again is that when they've built very attractive places, people have come from all over the world. So, in fact, they've seen the boom just persist, and it's really baffling a lot of people.
It is baffling a lot of people. Do you think that because it's gotten, you know, the pop culture attention, especially here in the United States, that it's given it a sort of a new stardom?
Absolutely. I mean, it certainly got a lot of, you know, star appeal here in the U.S. And I think, you know, especially in Europe, you see it even more than here in the States, because it's a bit closer. And the U.K. in particular has a lot of affinity towards Dubai. In fact, there are more Brits living in Dubai than almost anywhere else in the world, including some of the kind of mid-sized cities in the U.K. itself.
Well, you know, this is very interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the book. I mean, you know, we understand why this has become so popular to talk about, but let's talk about, you know, the book and what people will expect to find in the book. What are really the hot issues? What should people know about Dubai and company?
Well, the first point is that the book is about the Gulf region, mm-hmm. which is known as the GCC, the Gulf Cooperation Council, which is sort of an analogous entity to the European Union in the sense that it's a regional association of six countries in the Gulf. Dubai is part of the UAE, which is one of the six member states of the GCC. So the book is about the whole Gulf region. And the main point of the book is that this is a part of the world that no company can afford to ignore in its global strategy, because it's one of the areas offering the most interesting growth and dynamism in the years ahead.
Well, it definitely has appeal for a lot of different reasons. Why has this become such an important place for people to gather? I mean, why are we looking at multinationals, you know, integrating and coming to GCC and looking at that in the strategy? And, you know, this is kind of an interesting phenomenon in that, you know, it's almost as if you're not plugged in here, you're really not in top business. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that, Dr. Patton. And there are three factors, really, that are driving the fundamental attractiveness of the Gulf region. Now, the first factor is the prosperity of the region and what I call the sustained prosperity. And that is to say that because of the energy prices being where they are today, you see a huge amount of wealth coming into the region, and this has been the case for that last sort of 7 or 8 years. And it's expected to remain by most forecasts. So there's a lot of wealth coming into the region, and what's happening is, unlike previous oil booms, more of it is staying in the Gulf. So the first factor is prosperity. The second factor is the attractive shifts in demographics of the region. See, what's happened is that the Gulf had its first boom in the 1970s, when, if you'll remember, there was the first boom in oil prices.
Right.
And there was a lot of wealth coming into the region. However, at that time, the demographics were less attractive in that education was lower, the kind of institutions that were not in place for people to be well-trained, to be well-traveled, to be well-connected. Now all of that has changed. So what you find is the Gulf consumer and people working and living in the Gulf are much more connected to the broader world and therefore much more attractive customers for global businesses.
Well, you know, there definitely is a lot of information right now on the internet about Dubai. I mean, many articles on the internet. YouTube has certainly flooded the market from everything from, looking at the future video about Dubai to looking at accidents in Dubai. I mean, it's really kind of an interesting phenomenon right now.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, absolutely. It's captured a lot of people's imagination. And I think it's only going to grow that fascination with Dubai. But from a business perspective, Dubai is very interesting. But the whole Gulf region itself needs to be understood in order to get the real picture on Dubai.
Well, and that's part of the bigger conversation in the book, isn't it? It's really
Absolutely.
More about looking at the Gulf region as well and how actually misunderstood it is.
Yes, it is. It's very misunderstood. And I have a chapter on the book on the common misconceptions about the Gulf. And there are many, and a lot of them are very problematic, and they lead to people forming the wrong kinds of business strategies. So one of the misconceptions, for example, is that the Gulf customer, quote-unquote, hates us, right? And this sort of comes from a belief that the Arab customer is somehow anti-Western or anti-U.S. and therefore will never buy goods from the U.S. And you know, if you look at the commercial habits and shopping habits of people in that region, you find that nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, if you go to one of the shopping malls there, any shopping mall, but in particular in Dubai, there's one called the City Center Shopping Mall. It's got about 400 shops. About 250 of those are American, and about 100 more are European. So clearly there's a strong demand for American brands and American products, and it's not that there's any ill will towards the U.S.
Well, it is an interesting phenomenon. I mean, we're going to talk more about that. You know, I was reading that the first batch of homes on Palm Island sold out within 3 hours.
That's right.
Three hours.
That's right. And you know what's happening there, Dr. Pat, is that it's very much of a global market. So what's happening is that people like Richard Branson and I believe Tiger Woods might have something there. So that people are buying who are not themselves located in Dubai, and they're buying it because it's a place they like to visit. So what's occurring in that real estate market is that it keeps going up and up because it's not dependent on regional demand.
Well, and that's what we're going to talk about when we come back. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Amir Rahman, who has created a book called Dubai and Company, Global Strategies for Doing Business in the Gulf States. Why is this an important topic? Why are so many Americans getting involved in this? And what do you need to know about Dubai? We'll be right back.
Talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Louise Hay has shown millions of people how to heal their lives. You can be next. Now, Louise's inspirational life story is captured in the new You Can Heal Your Life, the movie. This loving portrait of Louise and the impact of her life work features guest appearances by Wayne Dyer, Cheryl Richardson, Doreen Virtue, and more. See the movie that's changing lives, now available on DVD. To watch a free preview, visit www.youcanhealyourlifemovie.com.
Are you one of the millions of frustrated people who can't take off weight or keep it off on a low-fat or low-calorie diet? It's hard, isn't it? Well, don't despair another day. The Sugar-Free Miracle Diet is the answer to your prayers. I'm Karen Bentley, and I lost 130 pounds on this program. I'm also the founder and CEO of the Sugar-Free Miracle Diet Company. Go to sugarfreemiracle.com, that's sugarfreemiracle.com, and get started today.
Are you starting a new business, signing a contract, or launching a new website or business product? Certified business and personal astrologer Madeline Gerwick uses good timing to give you the ideal time to start your new business venture. Visit PolarisBusinessGuides.com or call 877-524-8255. 8300. Attain higher business success and better return on resources with good timing. Visit PolarisBusinessGuides.com.
Is one of your loved ones in crisis, or would you like to empower your family to prevent a crisis from occurring? Crisis Intervention Coaching has a goal to empower every family to overcome any challenge with education, strategy development, and ongoing support. Take the first step to create workable solutions and empower your family today. Visit crisisinterventioncoaching.com or call the 24-hour hotline at 888-592-8400.
Do you or a loved one have chronic pain? ABC Health Solutions introduces Ferroblock, a fabric that relieves chronic pain with no side effects. Ferroblock's unique construction of micro-thin stainless steel and nylon interrupts EMFs, or high-frequency waves, from damaging our cells, causing inflammation and pain. Call 253-631-8270 or visit abchealthsolutions.biz to see a short video regarding Ferroblock. That's abchealthsolutions.biz.
From a place of special energy, the Sedona tools are specially crafted to work with the disruptive emotional energies of traumatic experience. You can release and resolve the past, move gracefully through the present, and attract the future you wish with power that's already yours. Your intent and creative visualization. Now work with the right tools. Visit thesedonatools.com. That's thesedonatools.com.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome back to the Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile. If you have a question or comment, call us toll-free at 866-472-5788. Now back to the program. Here's Dr. Pat Basile.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to the Dr. Pat Show. Thank you so much for joining us here today. We are thrilled to be having this conversation with Amir Rahman, who is talking to us about Dubai. He's written a book, Dubai and Company Global Strategies for Doing Business in the Gulf States. This is a breakthrough book in a lot of ways. And I want to make sure that folks have the website so that they can find out, first of all, more about Dubai, but, you know, how to get a copy of this book. So, Amir, why don't we give out your website as well?
Sure. So it's www.rahmaninstitute, and Rahman is spelled R-E-H-M-A-N, institute.com.
And for those of you that want to find out more about Dubai, it's very easy to do. I mean, there are a number of different ways you can do it. You can certainly go to dubai.com, www.dubai.com, and check it out. As I said before, you can get on Google or YouTube and take a look at the videos that are being done there and take a look for yourself. I mean, you know, visually, Amir, when we look at this, It is in contrast to what we see when we start to move inland, but it is a beautiful cluster of these islands. And, you know, some people believe and are concerned about the very infrastructure. I wanted to hear from you on that.
Sure. No, these are all man-made islands that you see. So Palm Island is man-made, and then there's the universe or the world, which is a different project that they have to have islands representing different continents on Earth. And you know, there's some concern about the environmental impact of this dredging and creating these man-made islands. That's one. And another one is more mundane, which is around the roads and the access points for these various islands and how that will be managed. But, you know, Dubai's always been quite good at building infrastructure when they need to. So it's more on the environmental side that some folks have raised concerns, and they're looking into making sure that it stays sustainable.
You know, from your experience, I mean, you are writing about more than just the beauty of these islands and the infrastructure. You're basically looking at a bigger picture. You're looking at the awareness in the Gulf and why there is such a lack of awareness in the Gulf and in European business circles. And, you know, let's talk about that for a minute. It appears that Dubai, you know, one of the missions is to attract a heightened level of business, especially in looking at how to implement and discuss and launch those businesses. You know, why do you think there's such a lack of awareness?
Well, you know, I think there are a couple of very good reasons for that lack of awareness. The first is that the Gulf has not been an attractive place for business except for the last 30 years or so, which is a relatively short time from a business perspective. So therefore, many people who are now in positions of senior leadership have never looked at the Gulf seriously from a commercial perspective. So that's one reason. Another reason is that people tend to conflate the Middle East and think of it as one homogenous region.
Oh, exactly.
And so when you see things like the war in Iraq and conflict in Palestine and Israel and a lot of difficulties in that part of the Middle East, people then tend to think, oh, well, it's not a good place to do business, whereas, in fact, the Middle East has several clusters within it, and the Gulf is a very attractive place for business.
And this is really part of what your mission is, to make us more aware and, you know, make people aware of the opportunities and beyond. I mean, you know, if we have this global, what I call is generalization of what is to be, then how do we get a new perspective? How do we create a new paradigm around this?
Well, you know, I think trade and commerce, and one reason why I think this book has some good potential is that trade and commerce has always been a way for various civilizations to connect and to get to know each other better. And I think, you know, the Gulf represents within the Islamic world a place which, that's very business-friendly, very comfortable for international companies to operate. And I think it's a very important way that we build ties by having good trade relationships. And the Gulf region, as I said, is a very attractive place, and it's going out of its way to make itself welcoming to U.S. companies.
Well, and, you know, this is, again, part of the reason that you've written this book, and certainly has become, you know, Dubai has become a big conversation in pop culture. And so, you know, let's talk a minute about what folks would need to know about doing business in this region.
Sure. Well, you know, one of the things that's very important to realize is that all six members of the Gulf region have joined the WTO, the World Trade Organization, and therefore they are liberalizing their laws. However, there still are some ownership restrictions in most, actually all GCC countries have restrictions of some sort. So if you want to enter the market, there are different ways to do it. It can either be done through free zones, which were pioneered by the UAE, and these are areas in which international companies can own their assets 100%, or you can enter the market through the regular onshore market, in which case you need a local partner with whom you share equity, and then you can have a business in the kind of main center of the city.
Well, you know, this is a big conversation. I want to mention to everyone right now that we have a couple of copies of the books to give away, and all you'll need to do is call in the Voice America number, and Harry will take down some information for you, 866-472-5787, 866-472-5787. We'll take the first two callers that call in. If you have any questions, please feel free to come on air. But we have two copies of the book, Dubai and Company, to give away to our listeners, which is really fabulous. And again, that toll-free number is 866-472-5787 or 5788. Let's get some information from you, and we're thrilled to give you a copy of the book. You know, Amir, as you look at, you know, what you've decided to do in terms of your own career, in terms of your own interests, mm-hmm. You know, what is it about the Gulf region? What is it about Dubai, you know, that holds a sense of hope and prosperity for people?
You know, it's I've seen a lot of regions in my work, as you mentioned in the beginning. I've been a consultant to global companies and looking at where they can grow anywhere in the world. And I find that what's most interesting about the Gulf region is the combination of, number one, its fundamental prosperity. So the wealth that's coming in, the demographic shifts, and the regulatory change. So these three factors together making it a very attractive place for business. So on the one hand, it's a very good place to grow. So that's part of what makes it very interesting to me. And on the other hand, the relative lack of understanding or awareness of the region is such that it makes it a very interesting thing to talk about. So for me personally, I felt that this was a region that I understood that is very important for business in the world today, and a lot of people haven't yet learned about it. So it seemed like a very important thing for me to work on.
It is very important. And we hear names like, you know, David Beckham and people that have also paid attention to, you know, the abundance and the prosperity energy around this aspect, this part of the world. You know, when we're looking at this conversation and people are reading the book, what do you want readers to take with them? What do you want readers to know about Dubai and about what you are so interested and passionate about?
Sure. Well, you know, the first thing I want them to know is that it's a region that is here to stay. So the Gulf region, in my view and in the view of a lot of other experts, is a region which can expect to be part of the business world and a place where very important for global strategy for the foreseeable future. So it's not a fad, but rather it's a place that we need to know about going forward. That's the first basic point. The second point that's important to realize is that the Gulf markets have a lot of their idiosyncrasies, so there are some things about them that are obviously unique and different, but overall, they're not that different from other emerging markets. So what that means, what I mean to say there is that the companies that have grown in Latin America, companies that have grown in Asia, can also expect to grow in the Gulf if they have the right strategies that fit the region.
So, you know, when we take a look at this and we look at the economy and we look at the, and, you know, as many people as have pointed to, look at the prosperity aspect of this, you know, we're looking at global business in a really different way. I mean, this may seem, you know, sort of very common in terms of where the wealthy, you know, congregate, where they do business. But, you know, clearly there is something underlying here that is very different than the normal gathering meeting place. Is that correct?
Sure. I mean, there are some things that are quite unique, but a lot of that has to do with the historical development of the region. So what's happened is because of the boom phenomenon that has made the region very prosperous, we found that the Gulf became very wealthy before it had the institutions in place that you typically find in wealthy countries. So a lot of what you see today, for example, you may be following the joint ventures between universities here in the U.S. and elsewhere, and the Gulf countries. So, for example, Cornell has a campus in Qatar, as does Georgetown, and NYU just announced something with Abu Dhabi. So you find that these institutions now are coming in to the region, and it's you know, typically you would have the universities in place before you have the prosperity, because that, you know, the universities come, people get more educated, and then they perform better economically.
Well, you know, thank you so much. This has been a great conversation. You know, Amir, thank you so much for joining us here today and for this incredible book, Dubai and Company. Thank you for your interest, and thank you for taking a different message out into the world. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Pat.
Let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Robert Wright, One Nation Under Debt. What is this about? Have we always been in debt? Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Let's go out and I can't be seen. Tides that I tried to swim against put me down upon my...
News. Opinion. Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
There is within you a power so great that you discover in the One Command. This revolutionary new book is taking thousands to success in moments. The One Command stops your negative thoughts in their tracks. In this teaching, you are able to reach naturally and easily into the deepest levels of yourself and make remarkable changes in your life. Go to CommandingWealth.com and start your new rich future now. Order The One Command at CommandingWealth.com.
Picture yourself standing in the ancient stone circle of Stonehenge or gazing in awe at Egypt's Great Pyramid and Sphinx. Visualize participating in shamanic ceremonies at Machu Picchu or receiving a timely message from the Oracle of Delphi. Rejuvenate your path of personal growth and renew your spirit by traveling to the world's sacred sites with Body Mind Spirit Journeys and other like-minded travelers. Visit BodyMindSpiritJourneys.com or call 800-231-9811.
Do you want a better relationship, to achieve outstanding business and career goals, or to improve your health and fitness? You have the answers. All the power you need is within you. Personal transformation is about a solid foundation in the workings of the conscious and unconscious mind, with a seminar or training that gets you high and keeps you there. Contact the Empowerment Partnership and unlock your hidden potential. Call 1-800-800-MIND or visit NLP.com. Whatever you think you are, you're more than that. Are you ready for greater clarity, courage, and commitment to live your passions? Are you ready to succeed in sync with your soul? Are you ready to honor your soul in any situation? With 21 years of experience, Sasha Sabbath is a leadership soul coach and certified passion test facilitator. At 415-328-2631. That's 415-328-2631. Or visit leadershipsoulcoach.com.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep because of the pain? I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin Pain Relief and Healing Cream. Toprasin relieves pain without side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't just take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want pain relief without side effects, just ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is now available at Fred Meyer, Natural Food, and other fine stores. Go to Toprasin.com for a store near you or call 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin.com or 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Have you ever thought about having your own internet talk show? Well, if you said yes, then click About Us. Then click Be a Host to get more information. Or just call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417.
Say that again.
480-294-6417. VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome back to the Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile. If you have a question or comment, call us toll-free at 866-472-5788. Now back to the program. Here's Dr. Pat Basile.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. And, you know, continuing on this conversation, it's almost paradoxical to talk in one segment about such abundance, prosperity as what we've seen and is going on in Dubai, and now to bring a conversation that is so much on the minds of people, and that has to do with debt. And right now, joining me here today, Dr. Robert Wright is here, the author of One Nation Under Debt, and we're going to be talking about this, but I want to mention to everyone, we've got several copies of this to give away. So if you are listening to this show right now and would like to get a copy, you'd have to call in to Voice America right now, 866-472-5787, 866-472-5787, to get a copy of this book. Here's why this conversation is important. It's important because it's on everyone's mind. It's important because so many people don't truly understand what is happening and the impact. Robert Wright is joining us here today, Clinical Associate Professor of Economics at New York's University Stern School of Business. He is a prolific author, engaging speaker, and also a curator of the Museum of American Finance. And so he's joining us here today as the author of the book, One Nation Under Debt. And this is a conversation that is going to, you know, expand the spectrum. It's going to take a broad look at what debt is, what it's been, and is this so unusual? Thank you, Dr. Wright, for joining us here today. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, and what great timing, too, just a week before tax day.
Yeah. Well, you know, what is the national debt right now, by the way?
It's just a tad shy of $9.4 trillion.
Wow.
Yeah, that's almost $31,000 per individual in the United States. That's from, you know, babies to the elderly and everyone in between.
Well, you know, it's kind of strange because, you know, isn't it, you know, pretty much less than 8 years ago we were looking at a balanced budget and a bunch of other things?
That's right. In fact, I remember there was a, some technical discussions going on at that time about what the Federal Reserve was going to do in order to conduct monetary operations, because traditionally it buys and sells treasury bonds, and they were supposed to all have gone away by this point.
So
plenty for them to trade.
Well, you know, it's interesting to kind of look at, you know, the flow and the evolution of things. And there are many reasons we could sit down and talk about the debt. And, you know, and this is what I'm hoping you'll share with us. But, I mean, you know, it's a big conversation. And so, you know, the question that comes to mind is, you know, what is it about this conversation that got your attention? I mean, talking about our nation being under debt seems so large, such a huge undertaking.
It was to some extent. You know, the book focuses on the early period when the nation was founded until the time that we paid off the first national debt in the 1830s, and then skips rapidly ahead to the near present to look at the situation today.
So, you know, when we look at what the evolution of debt is, let's start at the beginning. You know, here we are as a brand new country, and, you know, George Washington is making all the decisions. You know, was there such a thing as debt in our country at that time?
Absolutely.
It certainly wasn't, you know, in the range we're talking about now, but, you know, how did folks operate? How did government operate?
Well, the rebel government, the ones that declared independence against Great Britain, you know, on July 4th, 1776, as every school child knows, they couldn't raise much in the way of taxes. They simply didn't have the tax administration to do so, and, you know, maybe a third of Americans were go-hung, you know, behind the independence movement. Another third were loyal still to Great Britain, and they certainly weren't going to pay any taxes. And the other third or so were playing things by ear, so to speak. They were neutral, and they were, you know, going to see which side was likely to prevail before they were going to commit to one side or the other. So how do you fight a war when you can't raise taxes? Well, one thing you can do is sell bonds, and our early government did that. Our first governments did that, but they couldn't sell too many because, you know, the tax revenues weren't clear and the outcome of the war wasn't clear, and so you had to be, you know, quite patriotic in order to pony up good hard money for a vague promise that you might get repaid in the future. So the next resort was to print paper money, which in form and functions very similar to Federal Reserve notes today. So the government would acquire some paper, have it printed up with, you know, various denominations on it, and then use that to make their payments to soldiers and suppliers and whatnot. And that worked quite well for a while, but soon the government found that it had printed too much of this stuff, and so prices began to rise. And it's interesting, we're sort of in the exact same conundrum today.
Mm-hmm.
With the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates in order to try to stave off the subprime mortgage debacle. We may pay for that, you know, in 6 months or a year from now in the form of much higher prices.
You know, it seems like for a lot of people that this is, you know, this conundrum, this thing that is taking on a life of its own. You know, are we sort of keeping our heads in the sand by not truly not paying attention to what's going on right now? Because I think it's a tough issue for the average American to pay attention to when in their own group, in their own homes, in their own families, they're struggling.
Well, in a sense, but the two are linked, of course.
Yeah, yes.
Primarily, you know, what governments and what the Founding Fathers understood, and one of the reasons why they wanted to pay off the national debt as soon as they could, was that governments need to be able to combat shocks like the subprime mortgage problem with both arms, with monetary policy, which is the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates, and also with fiscal policy, which basically comes down to the federal government cutting taxes. You want to have both because the interest rate policy, as I just mentioned, if you use it too much, if you cut interest rates too much, you're going to cause inflation. And inflation, of course, is very bad for the economy as well. And it's particularly bad, of course, for poor people. You know, the poorest Americans are the ones who are most hurt by inflation because the prices of the things that they need, like gasoline, but also, you know, rent and clothing and whatnot, tend to go up much faster than their wages, can stay up. I mean, look how long it took to get the minimum wage raised, for example, right? So they ought to be paying attention because we could be in a heap of trouble here.
Well, you know, and then there's the question here also that we're looking at, Dr. Wright. We're looking at the question, will it stop? I mean, is this, you know, sort of this open-ended conversation? Is there any signs in the future that would say we're going to be able to put a lid on this and reverse it? And I think those are the things on people's minds right now. And, you know, when we look at where we are today compared to some of the history that you've written about, you know, are we very different today than we were during the time of George Washington or John Adams?
Yes, I think we are. Our early leaders were much more statesmen, and today's leaders tend to be politicians. And by that I mean, you know, politicians tend to pontificate and procrastinate, whereas statesmen tend to study issues deeply and try to come up with the best solution to problems. And they sometimes disagree. Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson disagreed bitterly over what to do with the U.S. national debt, but they were both, trying to do what was best for the country. And the politicians today, it seems to be mostly about sound bites and personalities and trying to avoid hard issues like this.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting to see, you know, what the competencies were back in the time of, you know, Jefferson and Washington, you know, in terms of what it took to run a government. I don't think any of them had to actually go get acting lessons, although I'm not sure. But as we look at these conversations, you know, there are debates that have gone on early on. And, you know, I think we decided back then there was a right side and a wrong side to national debt. And it's almost as if some of our early leaders had the same conversation we're having today. We'll talk about that when we come back from break. I am thrilled to have joining me here today Dr. Robert Wright. The book is One Nation Under Debt, Hamilton, Jefferson, and the History of What We Owe. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with the Dr. Pat Show. I'm your host, Dr. Pat Basile. We'll be right back.
News. Opinion.
Can you hear me?
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
I'm Dr. Pat Basile, the host of the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Let me help you take your empowering message to a community of people looking for products and services that value all life on earth and tap into the one true freedom we have, the freedom to choose. Let our listeners choose you. Join the buzz and be the buzz. Sponsor the Dr. Pat Show. Call me at 206-523-5522. That's 206-523-5522.
Go green at the Go Green Expo, New York City's largest eco-friendly consumer trade show on April 26th and 27th. Purchase the latest eco-friendly products and services from hundreds of exhibitors and learn from the best of green leaders. Visit GoGreenExpo.com. Learn how to green your life and help your environment. See Dr. Pat in person and listen to her speak with other top eco-minded leaders. Go Green Expo on April 26th and 27th in New York City. Visit GoGreenExpo.com. Go green at the Go Green Expo, New York City's largest eco-friendly consumer trade show on April 26th and 27th. Purchase the latest eco-friendly products and services from hundreds of exhibitors and learn from the best of green leaders. Visit GoGreenExpo.com. Learn how to green your life and help your environment. See Dr. Pat in person and listen to her speak with other top eco-minded leaders. Go Green Expo on April 26th and 27th in New York City. Visit GoGreenExpo.com.
Revitalize your soul with Wayne Dyer, Robert Holden, Doreen Virtue, Marianne Williamson, Greg Braden, and your other favorite Hay House authors on a day or weekend retreat in Las Vegas. It's the annual I Can Do It conference on June 26th through 29th at the Sands Expo, and it's packed with inspiring keynote lectures, interactive workshops, autograph sessions, exhibitors, and more than 35 best-selling authors. Tickets start at only $75. Call 800-654-5126 or visit icandoit.net.
Stop surviving. Start living. This is the year to bring your practice and your patients to the next level. Come to the workshop that can help you transform your practice and your life. See how beliefs affect our bodies and learn specific techniques for creating optimal health. Sponsored by the Institute of Healing Arts and Sciences. This workshop will help you do all of this and more. Register now for Merging Alternative and Traditional Therapies, April 11th through the 13th in Hartford, Connecticut. Call 866-303-HEAL.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome back to the Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile. If you have a question or comment, call us toll free at 866-472-5788. Now back to the program. Here's Dr. Pat Basile.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to the show. And if you do call in, we've got a copy of the book to give the first, I think, two or three callers. So joining me here today is Robert Wright. He is the author of One Nation Under Debt. And we're talking about the evolution of debt. And more importantly, you know, is this something that any of us can wrap our minds around? I mean, you know, there were debates about how to work with debt, whether we should have debt as a country or not, back in the day, but you know, here we are today. We don't hear that much about the debate anymore. Why is that?
Well, as I mentioned in the first segment, I think we just have a different type of leadership than what we used to have. The debate early on was more about short-term versus long-term costs and benefits of the debt. So Alexander Hamilton thought that the debt was a national blessing, and Thomas Jefferson thought that it was a curse, and it turns out they were both right. Hamilton was right in the short and medium term because the national debt helped the young United States to develop a modern financial system, which has been very important in our economic development despite these periodic crises like the one we're going through right now. And it also helped to cement the nation together. Because as I show in the book, there were bondholders, people who owned federal bonds throughout the United States, north and south, east and west, urban and rural, and throughout social strata as well. And so these folks had a natural inclination to want to try to keep the union together and to keep the national government relatively strong so that the government would be able to collect the taxes necessary to service the debt. Jefferson, though, was right in the long term. What he was worried about was, you know, government finding it easier to borrow and spend rather than to tax and spend, and realize that over time that would make a national debt that would get larger and larger and larger and would never go away. So Hamilton was right. We were able to pay it off once, but soon after the government, you know, found it easier to borrow and spend, and we've been in debt ever since. To the point now where when we pay our taxes, you know, next week, about 10 cents on every dollar is going to go just to pay interest on the national debt.
Well, you know, let's talk about this. I mean, have we really gotten used to the idea of being in debt? I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like when smallpox and, measles were sort of rampant in our country and we had no way to take care of it, there was much more awareness. And, you know, now there's very little conversation about it because we've been so indoctrinated and I think it's in part numbed to it. Is that what's happening with our debt? Or is it that people feel like this is such a big problem that they can't really do anything about it?
Well, Americans, of course, have enough debt of their own to worry about.
Exactly.
Point. Yeah. This $31,000 per person that's hanging out there is just as real. Now, we don't literally proportion it that way, but what it means is that taxes have to be higher in the future just to pay the interest on this debt. Which is more than we spend on, things like Medicare, Medicaid. It is a big problem, and $9.4 trillion is a very difficult number to come to terms with. I mean, there are no trillionaires, right? We have some billionaires, but nobody's close to having $1 trillion. Only major governments play with that sort of money. But you might remember back in 1981. Ronald Reagan tried to explain what $1 trillion meant.
Yes.
Do you remember what he said?
No, I don't remember, but it was kind of weird to me.
Well, this will seem very weird then, but he said $1 trillion would be a stack of $1,000 bills 67 miles high.
Mm.
The national debt's now just about $9.4 trillion, and the Federal Reserve doesn't emit $1,000 bills anymore. $100 is the highest denomination. So we have to make the stack $100 bills. And so if my math is right, that would be a stack of $100 bills 6,300 miles high.
Well, can we wrap our minds around that? I mean, can we really look at that? And I think this is part of the reason that you wrote the book. I mean, it's really looking at this level of awareness we have. And let's talk about that. What can we as individuals do? I'm here with Dr. Robert Wright. We're talking about his book, One Nation Under Debt. And, we're looking at, the transformation of how we talked about debt back in the time of Washington and Jefferson. And how does that relate to where we are now? Is there something beyond panic that people should be aware of right now?
Well, they could certainly try to get politicians to start thinking and talking about these.
Well, nobody's talking about it. No one is really talking about it.
No, right, but they might start to if people made it clear that they wanted this put on the agenda. It happened before, very early in our history, but it also happened in the 1990s, you might recall, where we had a very high national debt as a residue from fighting that last bit of the Cold War with the Reagan military buildup and so forth in the 1980s.
Yes.
And there was for a time a political consensus that we needed to pay the debt down, and we passed some legislation that the Supreme Court later said was unconstitutional, the presidential line item veto. But we also passed, legislation in Congress that essentially forced the federal government for a time to run a balanced budget, and it did. But this all came apart when, the administration changed to the Bush years and 9/11. For a while, people stopped focusing on the national debt and fiscal issues more generally, because we were more concerned, about preparing the nation against further terrorist attacks and whatnot. But in the meantime, the national debt has crept up from the point where we thought we were going to get rid of it to the point now where it's hard to imagine ever being able to pay this all off.
Well, it has to be addressed, and certainly that's got to be the conversation for, whoever comes into office in this next go-around. You know, thank you so much for joining us here today, Dr. Wright. I mean, you know, this is a conversation. I mean, part of this is getting an understanding of what's happening, and more importantly, to know that there can be a solution. It may not happen overnight, but certainly we can do something. Can you let our listeners know what is the personal message that you want our listeners to have with them as we end the show today?
I wasn't expecting that one. I'm not sure what...
They didn't warn you about me.
The personal message would be if you ever have an opportunity to converse with a politician, ask them about their stance on fiscal responsibility, on the national debt, on balanced budgets, about all of that stuff, which is so crucially important both to our country's well-being and our personal well-being.
Well, thank you for joining us here today. All right, everyone, thank you for listening to the Dr. Pat Show. We'll see you next week, same time, lots of engaging conversation. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to The Dr. Pat Show, radio to thrive by. To contact Dr. Pat, visit thedrpatshow.com. Tune in next Tuesday for another dynamic hour of The Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile.